I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Today, we conclude our Friday, February series about how the pandemic has upended the world of work by focusing on its impact on public transportation here in the Philadelphia region. SEPTA has been hammered by the pandemic, especially on the regional rails, which saw ridership fall off something like 85%. Buses, subways, the L, and trolleys have seen reduced ridership while the agency works to make the system COVID-free. Earlier this month, SEPTA and the Kenney administration unveiled an ambitious plan, a vision for 2045, that rethinks and redesigns how public transportation will meet the needs of the region going forward. Joining us is Christopher Pachowski. He's Director of Policy and Strategic Initiatives for Philadelphia's Office of Transportation, Infrastructure, and Sustainability, known as OTIS. Christopher Pachowski, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. It's nice to be back on your show.
Nice to have you back on the show. So what will bring riders back to SEPTA?
Well, I think in the very immediate future, it's getting the pandemic under control and rolling out the vaccine. But in the longer term, I think we think there's a room to rethink transit to provide better access, not just for the morning and afternoon commutes, but high quality service throughout the entire day.
And I do want to pick up on that, but just to talk about sort of where things stand today, and even starting with the regional rails, I said something like ridership had dropped off 85%. I don't know if it's come back at all, but what is the status of the regional rail system, which is a very comprehensive system here in the Philadelphia region?
Yeah, to the degree that the system really depended on the downtown briefcase type commuter in large part, and that's the folks who are still working at home. It is down. It was down over 90% at some point. Wow. It has come back into the, only down 80 or 85%. But still, it's a shadow of its former self in terms of ridership, even though SEPTA continues to provide the service. So, it's getting people back to the office, but then rethinking how they can use regional rail to get around at all times of day. For a trip that maybe right now they drive, or in the past they took the car around the region, having that kind of high quality frequent service all day long.
Christopher, this will probably make you smile. A Facebook comment from Mary. Believe it or not, SEPTA is one of the things I miss during this year of work from home. My train ride is 20 minutes of reading and both physically and mentally separating myself from the office. Since I've been taking the same line for about 20 years, I also get to see familiar faces.
Yeah, I miss my own. I would commute by the trolley a few days a week into my office, and I miss that commute, the time there, and bumping into people in the neighborhood and saying hello, or getting that mental break. I never appreciated how much rushing between meetings at least got me a little bit of exercise. When you can click between meetings, it's not the same. I know a lot of people miss their public transit commute and getting out and seeing the city.
We also know that a lot of the essential workers, use the bus system, use the trolleys, use the L, use the subways to get to work or to get to where they need to go, to maybe pick up children. And we know with a lot of essential workers, these tend to be more low-income workers. How is the system responding to them under this pandemic?
Well, yeah, that's the folks who've needed to continue riding the system the entire time, and it's been a ride. I think is fair to say. There was that period for a few months when service was drastically curtailed and people had a harder time getting around. And we saw a lot of people turning to riding bikes or other driving. But the since service has come back, that's why the masking has been so important to keep the essential workers who rely on the system safe. And I think this auto ownership question comes in where a lot of the lower income workers just don't have another option.
Right.
And compelling people to buy a car is just not a great, for either the individual or our city.
Well, certainly under the pandemic, when people are losing their jobs or losing their hours at work, it's not like they've got cash lying around that they can use to buy a car. And the masking thing is so important. Do we know what the compliance has been? Are people who are using public transit, are they generally masking up before they get on the L, yes, for instance?
Yes, they are generally doing it. I think it's something like 90%. So it's high. It's not perfect. There's still room to improve, but it has been very good throughout the pandemic. You know, the times I have taken SEPTA during the pandemic, you know, overwhelming number of folks on the vehicle have their mask on.
This is part of a series we're doing about how the pandemic has upended the world of work. And you know, looking into our crystal balls, it's sort of hard to know what work is going to look like going forward. But as you mentioned, with more vaccines, more jobs opening up, I assume more people will be using the public transportation system. But are we talking about a system that was really designed for a different time, a different era?
Yeah, I think we are. And that's part of what's the reason we have the ideas in this plan, are that we got to think about the future. We've got to think about the folks who, you know, have been taking transit the whole time. It's also important to think that the work trip is, it's always been a minority of overall trip making, and the degree that transit can serve and start to think about a wider variety of trips. I think there's a lot of opportunity here, and it's opportunity that we've seen before the pandemic, and it's only been highlighted now with, you know, the crystal ball, you know,
right,
you know, prognostications that, you know, we'll have somewhat less. It's hard to know how much less commuting into work even after the pandemic, but something less of a commute market.
And I do want to talk about the city, but I thought it was interesting in the plan, looking at the regional rail system, it's not the, you know, eight cars going on the, you know, the West Trenton line. It's actually fewer cars and more times, more like a metro system. Help us understand what that would look like and how it would work.
Yeah, you know, having all your capacity just go once an hour, it's a lot easier to operate that service, and the SEPTA has a lot of constraints. But if we put our customer hat on, and what I want to see as a customer, I'd rather have an option every 15 minutes than just once an hour. And that's the kind of thing where if you don't have to, you know, schedule your life around the train schedule, now all of a sudden, you know, it becomes much more compelling to take that transit option than before. You know, but it's also good for people who maybe, are going to have to take it no matter what. You know, if they don't have to wait a half hour, or if they miss a train, that doesn't mean being an hour late for work. Maybe it only means being 15 minutes late. These are the kind of things, if I put on my customer hat, or even, you know, listen to, you know, all the you know, low income workers that we talk to as we did this plan and their unique needs, you know, having the more frequent service really opens up a lot of freedom for people.
Yeah. I notice in the transit plan that it's built in many ways around buses. I mean, hopefully electrifying buses, but it seems very bus-centric. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do. That was intentional, because we saw that, you know, over the last, I don't know, call it 50 years of SEPTA's existence, the entire system has been never gotten the investment it really needed. But I think the bus passenger has been you know, somewhat neglected. And this is half of riders, which is, you know, a much higher percentage than in other cities. And these folks tend to be lower income than other folks. So we also think that the bus improvements can be done a lot quicker and a lot cheaper. And while we want to have that long-term vision for rail, we see that with a much smaller investment, we can really improve a lot of people's lives, and not in the maybe 10 to 15 years that a really large infrastructure project takes, but in a 3 to 5 year period, we can, you know, provide meaningful improvements in service if we focus investments on bus infrastructure
and make it more affordable for low income riders.
Yeah, I think the affordability is one piece. You know, what I was just talking about was the quality, you know, the reliability and speed of the service, but the ability to pay the fare is the other part. What we realized as we were doing the math is you just can't lower the fare enough to make it affordable given Philadelphia's poverty problem and still bring in enough revenue to pay for that high-quality, equitable service. So what we see as a way out of this conundrum is a low-income fare program where We have some kind of program. Los Angeles, Seattle has it for their transit systems. Usually there's some kind of dedicated funding, just like the lottery pays for the senior passes here in Pennsylvania. Having some dedicated revenue source that goes to a low income fare program would really open up the system to a lot of folks who just can't pay the $5 to take a round trip ticket. Right. That's a real imposition given their incomes and budgets.
Here's a question from William. I just turned 65, so now I ride SEPTA for free. How much does this program hurt SEPTA's overall revenue? But as you mentioned, a lot of this coming from the lottery, but is that a wash?
I believe that's a wash, that all the funding for that program. So I don't believe it hurts SEPTA, and to the degree that it, brings in some revenue and, people over 65, senior citizens tend to take trips off peak. So those off peak trips are usually a little cheaper to provide than peak trips.
And going forward and looking again into this crystal ball of 2045, what will it cost to really modernize and redesign the system to meet the needs of the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it will be costly. The exact numbers are not precisely determined. And if you saw SEPTA just committed yesterday to doing a master plan to take our regional rail ideas forward to an exact cost, I think in the billions is a fair estimate for the regional rail ideas. We think we can make meaningful improvements, and there's some cost in the plan for about $10 million a corridor, putting in bus-only lanes and better boarding islands and signal priority. So, we think for the, tens to about $100 million, we can make real improvements. And I think there's two parts to the funding piece that I'm particularly excited about. One is the new Biden administration. We're hopeful. We're optimistic. We're not going to count those chickens yet, but that there's going to be a real partnership for transit in a way that maybe we haven't seen since the 1970s and 60s in this country, when the subways in Atlanta and Washington D.C., for example, were built. And the other is, I think there's some encouraging conversations that have been going on the last few years at the regional level, getting the various counties together and really viewing us as a region and pitting the suburb against the city.
Well, I hope it comes to pass. Christopher Pachowski, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And he's Director of Policy and Strategic Initiatives for Philadelphia's Office of Transportation Infrastructure and Sustainability, also known as OTIS. We've got two guests waiting in the wings, and we're going to carry on this conversation, looking at some of the challenges facing public transportation under the pandemic, but also looking into the future and how to create a public transportation system that's built for all of our lives. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. This month on Fridays, we have devoted the hour to exploring how the pandemic has upended the world of work. And today we conclude by looking at public transportation here in the Delaware Valley. SEPTA, PATCO, New Jersey Transit have all been hit hard by the pandemic, losing riders, especially as we heard on SEPTA's regional rails, and losing money. But imagine a region post-pandemic without an extensive public transportation system, or an even better one. How can public transit be improved? How can it be made safe for workers and riders, especially during the pandemic? What do riders want, and what will get them back using the system? And we have two guests who are going to join us for the rest of the hour. Christopher Salas is Associate Professor of Civil, Architectural, and Environmental Engineering at Drexel University, also leader of a collaboration between Drexel and SEPTA. Christopher Salas, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty, for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. And he joins us by Skype. Also with us is Janet Chernitz, and she's Deputy Director and Director of New Jersey Policy at the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. And Janet Chernitz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Christopher, if I can begin with you, just because we were talking about SEPTA, and you've been working with SEPTA just to make sure that the system is as COVID-free as it possibly can be. What sparked this collaboration with SEPTA?
Yeah, we were in conversations with SEPTA back in April, right after the pandemic started, and we realized that their ridership went down to below 10%, and we were they approached us to look at cleaning approaches, disinfection technologies. But once we talked to staff at SEPTA, we realized that they needed to bring back riders and regain their confidence in the safety of riding on public transportation. And so we gathered a big team at Drexel to work with people at SEPTA to address the issues they're having with the pandemic and their low ridership and people's concerns about riding on mass transit. Mm-hmm.
And in the early days, this is, a year ago, we were thinking, yes, you have to wipe off all the surfaces. You still do that today, but it really is a virus that is transmitted through the air. What has SEPTA done to address that?
Yeah, we actually have a team together, some engineers and scientists at Drexel with people at SEPTA, and we applied for some funding from the Federal Transit Administration. And we were notified in mid-January that we were awarded a grant to actually do some research to look at how can air ventilation, improving air ventilation, and maybe adapting some air purification technologies can reduce the transmission risk of COVID-19 and other types of infectious diseases that you might be exposed to on mass transit.
And do we know, are people coming back? I mean, it sounds like, based on our first guess, that maybe not the regional rails yet, but that people are using the rest of the system in Philadelphia.
Yeah, people are still using it. Some people have to use it.
Right.
And even if they're afraid to use mass transit, they still use it because it's really essential to them.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Jenna. And we've been focusing on the Philadelphia region for all the obvious reasons. But as you look across the country and you've got colleagues that are working in different parts of the country, is what's happening here with public transit being duplicated, replicated in urban areas across the country?
Yes, I think so. I think a lot of our transit agencies are dealing with the same challenges, where the 9-to-5 worker who typically is in an office is no longer going in. So that ridership has substantially declined. But you're seeing retaining ridership in the cities, particularly the lower income communities, where we see more of the transit dependent who rely on public transportation not only to get to work, but as their primary source of moving around. So I think a lot of these challenges are seen across the board.
And I don't think we know the answer to this, and I'll put this back to you, Jenna, but we're dealing with the pandemic, and the question is, will everything go back to normal once the pandemic is over, or will have things changed so permanently, especially when it comes to public transit and work, that we're really going to have to redesign things going forward? Let me toss that to you, Janet.
I think that remains to be seen. We still don't know what that new norm is going to be, but I think we're pretty confident that we're not going to see the same norms that existed pre-COVID. People are reimagining and reconfiguring their lives in terms of where they're choosing to work, play, and live, and also how they get around. So I think it's going to be very critical for the continuation of public transit to adapt and evolve to meet those needs.
Well, and it's interesting to look at, you know, the sort of tent poles of rush hour, right? The 6:30 in the morning to the 9 o'clock rush hour getting into the city, and then the reverse going home. Do you think, Jana, with the way people are working now, especially coming from the suburbs, that those tent poles have kind of flattened out?
Yes, I think as people are returning to the office, we're not going to see the typical morning and evening rush Monday through Friday, rides will be more scattered as people go back to the office, maybe once or twice the week, or twice a week, perhaps not at the same time. So I just think how people choose to ride and what kind of service is going to be offered is going to look very different moving forward.
Let me go back to you, Christopher, and just going back to the work that you're doing with SEPTA related to the public transportation system here in the Philadelphia area. And I had asked our first guest about mask wearing. And of course, I mean, that's on us to be responsible citizens. But how critical is that, do you think, to getting people comfortable using the system?
It's very important, especially since COVID-19 is transmitted through the air primarily. There's been studies that, you know, wearing masks greatly reduces the risk to the operators and riders, and even in other settings to those essential workers that spend a lot of time in those enclosed spaces.
Do we know? I mean, we know that bars, for instance, crowded restaurants, that that is a place of transmission. Do we know, and I'll put this first to you, Christopher, do we know what the transmission rates are related to public transit?
No, we don't. There's been some comparisons between, you know, the community infection rate and ridership, but there's nothing very clear. And that's why the FTA put out a call for grants for people to do research to further look into what those transmission risks are and hopefully provide information for the transit agencies and industry as well as the public to show them what the risks are and also try to find ways to reduce those risks.
Right. Jana, anything you want to add to that? Do we know, or have we learned anything about that yet? Do we have Jana? Okay, we're going to get her up. She's on a timeline, and we will get her back in on the conversation. I'm talking with Christopher Sales, and he's Associate Professor of Civil, Architectural, and Environmental Engineering at Drexel University, leader of this collaboration between Drexel and SEPTA to make sure that the buses, the regional rails are as COVID-free as they possibly can. And we want to hear from you, especially if you ride public transportation or you used to ride public transportation, what would bring you back? And obviously, if you work in public transportation, we especially want to hear from you. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Christopher, let me go back to you and talk about the people that work for SEPTA, that work for public transportation. What is it that they want for themselves and each other in order to make sure that they're safe under the pandemic?
I mean, just like the public, you know, they want clean space. And, you know, as they're learning that they also need clean air, you know, they want to make sure that they're provided with clean air in their workspaces and any of the, you know, PPE, personal protective equipment that they need to stay safe.
And have they, I mean, do they feel safe? Do we know that yet? And I know this is being worked on, but do they feel safe working for the system?
I've talked to a few of them. I haven't talked to, you know, everyone that's been, you know, in the buses or in the trains, you know, during the day. I talked to a lot of their engineers and higher administration people. But I know that, you know, they're trying to get people to regain confidence and, you know, they have instituted cleaning regimens that where they disinfect and clean more often than they did before the pandemic. And they're also making efforts to change their filters. And then the collaboration with Drexel, they're looking also at air ventilation. You know, how does closing the windows, opening the windows, or the doors opening and closing when they come to stops, how does that, you know, affect airflow? You know, how does the capacity, occupancy levels in the different vehicles affect risks, not only to passengers, but to themselves?
Sure, sure. I mean, they're there, what, 8 hours a day at least? Let me get Jana Chernitz back in on the conversation. Again, Deputy Director and Director of New Jersey Policy at the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. Jana, we have you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, that's good. Let me just pick up on what Christopher Sales was talking about in terms of cleanliness and ventilation. I think if you walk into a car, you can see how clean it is. Ventilation is more invisible. From a public's perspective, what are riders, what are they looking for?
We took a survey of riders in June. At that point, you know, we were still learning about how COVID was transmitted. There was a difference between active riders and non-active riders, but what both riders were looking for was the cleanliness of their trains and their buses. You can see that there's a perception when you're looking at something, you can see the cleanliness versus, as you point out, ventilation, where you really, it's hard to wrap your head around that. But I think what we're seeing is to make people comfortable is the mask wearing. And as we're learning more and more about how COVID is transmitted and the CDC mandates and the agency's understanding the mandatory requirement of masks, social distancing, and cleanliness are on the forefront of both riders and employees to make people feel safe utilizing public transportation. Because these are
Go ahead.
These are also essential workers who are at risk not only when they are commuting by public transportation, but in their work as well. And that certainly resonates on how they're going to behave and the choices that they're going to make when they return home to their families.
Well, and mask wearing, I mean, that is, you know, just one of the most obvious things, sort of like cleanliness, Jenna. I mean, you see it. And, you know, there's always that idiot, that knucklehead who will come on and be belligerent about not wearing a mask. And if I can go back to you, Christopher, I mean, then it falls on the, you know, the conductor or, you know, the employee to enforce that. Is that, how much of a problem do you think that is?
I mean, I know there's been confrontations. We've all seen it on social media and on the news.
Yeah, exactly.
But I know SEPTA has, you know, has ambassadors. They have a new initiative, you know, to get people to wear masks. And if they don't have masks, I think they're trying to supply it to them, and to tell them why they should wear them for their own safety and the safety of others. So they're trying to make efforts, and they're also, you know, tallying up, monitoring the compliance rates. And I think we're going to use that information as well to see, like, what the effect of those compliance rates of mask wearing, how that affects transmission risks on their different vehicles.
Jenna, just sort of an overall question about, so, you know, if systems are losing riders, the nature of work is changing. I mean, what will then bring riders back? And maybe even at newer capacities that we didn't have before the pandemic?
Well, in order to get ridership back, people are going to need to be going to where they used to go before, i.e. the office. So if people are no longer going to the office, they're just simply not going to be using public transportation. And this gets into what your earlier guest was talking about, was reimagining looking at a way to expand public transportation to meet not only our needs for commuting and working, but to be an option for how we move around and during our daily lives. So a public transportation to serve all of our transportation needs. And that's the forward thinking and the future of public transportation, looking at it more for getting to places where we need to go in terms of recreation, solving maybe a first mile, last mile problem, expanding our notion of public transportation to include more micro mobility options such as bike share, e-scooters, e-bikes, expanding the opportunity and the availability of forms of public transportation, increasing the frequency, not just only during peak hours, which we have traditionally seen, but 7 days a week. Because right now, a lot of the service is decreased on the weekends or even non-existent on the weekends. And for the transit dependent and for our lower income residents, that could result in isolation on the weekends because they just have no way to get around. So this is a opportunity. Out of crisis rises opportunity. And this is certainly a time of opportunity to relook at our disinvestment in public transportation and turn to an investment and looking at as a social issue as it affects people's quality of lives.
Let me go back to you, Christopher. We're talking about public transportation. While I-95, it's been under construction, I think, for my entire life, but while I-95 is being widened and obviously being opened up for commuters, public transportation has to compete with big highways. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, the issues of climate change and environmental sustainability. Your prior guest talked about it, and his office deals with sustainability. And, you know, public transportation is probably one of the more environmentally friendly ways to commute and get to places. And we need it. It's vital for that aspect, not only for our daily lives and working, but also for the environment and sustainability, and actually for our health, for air quality health. So we really need to work on regaining people's confidence post-pandemic or even during the pandemic right now, because we never know what other things might come in the future. So we have to kind of think, how do we keep everybody's confidence that it's safe to ride on public transportation?
I mean, Jen, and we have to, this is this intense relationship that Americans have with the car, or perhaps their car.
Yeah, we are a very car-centric society. We have been building roads and investing substantially in roads and bridges, and developing in a way that we are creating a car-dependent society. We are substantially behind the eight ball on that in comparison to other countries where they have invested in public transportation, as you said before, to make it more of a life choice. And we're designing public they're designing public transit for life. We're in New Jersey, even in the United States, we're nowhere near that. So those kinds of development and investments need to be prioritized, and optimistic with the Biden administration, we'll have more and more dollars available to invest in reducing the dependency on cars, and providing more investment for public transportation agencies, and even the states investing more so that we can build and expand public transit and give it the priority that we have seen for cars and roads.
Well, we're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation talking about thinking about a post-pandemic public transportation system. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, and today we conclude our Friday, February series on how the pandemic has upended the world of work. We're focusing on public transportation. It's been hit hard, losing riders, hemorrhaging money. What will bring riders back? How can service be improved? And what does the future of public transit look like? And again, we want to hear from you. If you use the service, if you don't, what would get you to use a public transportation service? And obviously, if you work in public transportation, we want to hear from you as well. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Talking with Jana Chirwitz, Deputy Director, Director of New Jersey Policy at the Tri-State Transportation Campaign, and Christopher Solis, Associate Professor of Civil, Architectural, and Environmental Engineering at Drexel University. He's the leader of the collaboration between Drexel and SEPTA. Let me go back to you, Jen, to something you said about that first mile, the importance of looking at that first mile, and I guess how to get people out of their cars to drive that first mile and to get them to use something else. Speak to that if you could.
Sure. So the first mile and last mile problem is connecting people from their homes or from their destination from availability of public transit. That is something that we could be looking at regionally and on an agency level as well as on a state level in order to encourage more transit use, making sure that it is an option for people to get to and not have to rely on their cars. So that could mean having those micromobility options such as bike share, or even shuttles to be taking people from public transportation to their destination to be making it a viable option. That creates more connectivity and does increase usage of public transit.
Yeah. And you see bikes, certainly in Philadelphia, they're, I'm not sure where the company is, but I mean, they're bike share options, it looks like, in many parts of the city, certainly in Center City, Philadelphia. Is that true, Jana, in other cities as well?
Other cities are trying to incorporate bike share and other micromobility and e-mobility options. It's a little bit slower than perhaps in other countries, but I think that the pandemic has had us reevaluate how we get around. People are out walking and biking more and seeing the viability of those options, not just for recreation and to get a breath of fresh air, but potentially seeing that as a way to get around. The pandemic is definitely changing our perception of how we move and just how we live our daily lives.
Christopher, we got several emails. One from Jacinda says, my husband is a physician in Center City and is ready to return to regional rail now that he is fully immunized. The problem is that the schedule is too limited for him to work and many other commuters right now. A tweet from Sophia, as a carless student, I used to rely on SEPTA to get about. After the pandemic, I'd like to see buses following their schedules more closely and a better system to track when a bus is coming. I've waited a long time and been late due to detours. Anything, Christopher, you want to respond to those listeners about? I mean, there's a lot there, but go ahead.
SEPTA wants their riders back. And I think they had to cut back because they lost so much ridership. They rely on the revenue of people riding to help maintain the services that they provide. And they're working really hard to regain the trust and confidence of their riders so they can come back. And I think once they come back, I think they can start offering more regular service, hopefully, for their riders.
And we all heard just a glimpse of what the city and SEPTA is at least imagining looking to 2045. And just picking up on that, and Christopher, going back to you, the idea, since our caller mentioned regional rails, the idea of fewer cars but more frequent stops. Does that seem like a smart move?
I'm not sure. I just remember my time in Hong Kong. It was really convenient. It was more of a subway system, but having it, you know, really consistent and, you know, you didn't have to really wait a long time for the rides. I think everyone would enjoy it, and I think more people would ride it like they do in other countries.
How does that work in Hong Kong? So you've got Hong Kong, the city, but it also works in the outskirts?
Oh, I'm not sure about the outskirts. I was just visited the city, but I just remember being amazed at how frequent, you know, the trains came. And really, everyone pretty much rides public transportation there. And I think if we provide more consistent and more regular service, I think more and more people would ride, hopefully.
Hopefully. Jana, you want to add to that? I mean, you know, if you build it, they will come, right?
Sure, if you build it, they will come, but you need to make sure that you're building it to respond to where people are going. And I think that is the deeper dive that our transit agencies need to do, is to learn more about how our behaviors and our trips are changing because of the pandemic and designing a public transportation around people's lives. I think that's going to be very critical moving forward. Absolutely, frequency and reliability, but also importantly, affordability. Your previous guest also discussed about how fares do affect lower income workers and lower income residents of the state. And affordability is going to remain key. Right now, New Jersey Transit riders particularly pay the highest fares in the nation.
Really? I didn't realize that.
They've seen more fare hikes in the past 10 years. There's been about, since 2000, there's been about 5 fare hikes. So need to hold fares steady, which thankfully they are doing this coming up fiscal year. But transit agencies rely heavily on ridership in order to fund their budgets. SEPTA's about 1/3 of their fares are going towards operating, but New Jersey, that rate is higher. So there is a strong dependency on that income from fares to keep transit going. So it's very, very crucial that we have to have that ridership come back.
Yeah, and this is a more philosophical question, Jenna, which is just, and it's interesting to look at Hong Kong or even to look at countries in Europe to see how public transit works. Now, these are smaller countries than the United States of America, but nonetheless, Jenna, have you looked at what they do in France or what they do in England? And, you know, I've taken public transportation in a bunch of different countries.
Frequency, reliability, and also just cultural and societal norms of their view of public transportation. We are certainly not there yet, but we are moving towards that in the United States of seeing public transportation as just a normal part of getting around. We're still very car-centric. But from New Jersey Transit's perspective, they are unique as that they are a statewide public transportation system versus a city transportation system like MTA or SEPTA. So there's increased challenges when you're looking at a statewide agency versus city agency. But either way, our level of investment is still far behind other countries when it comes to public transportation.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Jenna Chernitz, and she's Deputy Director and Director of New Jersey Policy at the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. Christopher Solis, Associate Professor of Civil, Architectural, and Environmental Engineering at Drexel University. And he's the leader of their collaboration between Drexel and SEPTA, working to make sure that passengers feel safe from the COVID-19 virus, and what can be done to get people back using the system. And we want to hear from you, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Again, especially if you use the system, what would get you to use the system? What would bring you back? And if you work for the system, we especially do want to hear from you. Christopher, going back to you, I mean, if we could start from scratch, which we can't, obviously, how would we even sort of design, whether it's the buses we use or the rail cars that we use or even just the system we use, what would respond to what it is that we need right now?
Oh, it's tough because, I mean, I think in cities like Philadelphia, you know, we have a lot of older infrastructure and we kind of have to deal with it and work with it the best that we can. And there might actually, you know, they might actually work a little bit if we make some minor modifications. And I think that's where we're trying to work with SEPTA to understand, you know, how the current system works, you know, how air ventilation works and what tweaks we need to make to improve it. I think in an ideal world, yeah, we would have, you know, really great filtration and good ventilation, you know, natural ventilation or mechanical ventilation through like a cabin's HVAC system, and even cleaning, you know, even having, you know, really easy cleaning methods and safe cleaning methods. You know, we would have those in place, but we kind of have to adapt to what's in place, you know, the materials, the way, you know, the cabins are built. You know, for instance, their filtration system, even putting in better filters. We have to make sure that the air flows through those filters. It could bypass them if it's not properly fitted, and things like that. So we really need to learn how to work with what we have and kind of make improvements that way. And then hopefully with some further funding, we can kind of make some bigger changes, more better improvements for the future.
And we're talking about a system that goes back decades, right? I don't have it at my fingertips of when SEPTA started or, you know, when we built the subway system, for instance. But we're talking, what, 50 years, something like that?
Yeah, definitely. At least 50 years, maybe even a little bit more for some of the trolley lines.
Jen, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, and it's a really important question. And I think if we had to go back and look at the way we're going to build public transportation, we also need to look at our development patterns. Looking, we've the sprawl development has created that dependency on automobiles, need to go back and focusing on more dense development and building a public transportation system that responds to our land use so that they work cohesively. I think that is where we started to move away and started to disinvest in public transit when we weren't developing and growing in such a way to encourage that more dense walkability, transit-friendly development. So I think it goes back to even further that we're putting a public transportation system and not connecting it to the way we're building and growing.
I mean, the highway system created the suburbs, did it not, Jenna?
Absolutely. We had, with the advent of the car and the reliability and the dependency of the car, we're just expanding and increasing car ownership and the use of cars in order to get to where we need to go. And I think we need to retreat from that and start looking at more dense development in order to reduce the dependency on automobiles. And that's it directly affects our environment. Our leading cause of greenhouse gas emission is from that transportation sector. So we definitely need to be moving away.
But do you think there is, but do you think that there is a role for public transportation? I mean, in the suburbs where so many people live or in even more rural parts of the country, is there a way to think about it that can make it user-friendly?
That goes directly back to investment and allowing public transit systems and networks to grow to offer that service, whether it's expanding rail lines or expanding buses and clean buses, electric buses. You mentioned that earlier, during this hour. That type of investment is going to be greatly needed if we're going to be reaching what we call the transit deserts. So that public transportation is a viable option. Right now, there's a lot of areas that just don't have access to public transit at all.
And Christopher, how important is just trust so that people using the system, trust that it will work, trust that it's clean, trust that it's safe?
That's the biggest thing that I think SEPTA and other public transit agencies are working towards, is building the trust of their ridership and even their employees that it's a safe place to work and to ride on. And so that trust is very key to the puzzle.
And it also comes from communicating. I mean, being able to tell the public and have one of our listeners said, I want to know why a bus is late, that there needs to be a way of communicating information as people wait for a bus, for instance.
Yeah, I think with this partnership, we're trying to think of ways to inform the public, when is the air clean? Are there things like monitoring CO2 in a cabin to show that there is fresh air coming in, that it's not stale? And so those things are, that's information that hopefully we can figure out a way to, provide and display to the public so they can feel trust, even when they're currently riding on a bus or train.
Jenna, we're almost out of time here, but is there a system, is there a country that you think is the model we should strive for?
I think that we could look at a number of different countries' systems for public transportation and adapt parts of what they are doing. But I think a collaborative effort in working with experts, input from riders, health experts, safety experts, environmental experts, working collaboratively, come up with a public transportation system that works for the city, that works for the state, that works for the region. And what's most importantly is that works for the customer. The customer input, the rider input, is going to be very crucial for the transit agencies as they're rebounding from COVID. We need to make sure that it's convenient, reliable, safe, resilient, easy to use, and just remains a viable option if we are going to improve our quality of lives and rebound from COVID.
Well, we have to leave it there. My thanks to both of you. Jenna Chernitz, thank you for joining us, Director of New Jersey Policy at the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times. Christopher Solis is Associate Professor of Civil, Architectural, and Environmental Engineering at Drexel University and leader of this collaboration between Drexel and SEPTA, Christopher Salas. Thank you for joining us as well.
Hey, thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you so much for joining us.